KX, mobile.
KX and zero TR.
Cooler HKX. Hey, Tom. I got, I still got to go switch vehicles. I still had one stop after left your place.
Well, Bernice is getting somewhat better. And I told her I wanted to get over here and tell you. She's still got that leg cramp, but she don't drink enough water, and I think that's part of it. But this one was a lot more severe this time because she never shows pain. Obviously, just looking at her, you could tell it.
Well, I'm glad it's eased up on her. But, yeah, as windy as it is and cold, it, like this, it'll suck the moisture right out of you. So it's a good idea to drink plenty of water, even though on a cool day like this, we don't really think about it.
Just take her out a bottle of water if she's working out in the garden or something, because she never does. And German, hard head. But told her not to go down there to Tim's chicken pen tonight. No, it's okay. I feel better when I walk, and then she gets back, and it got serious there a while ago, but she's looking some better now. Are you?
Yeah.
I was about ready to take her to urgent care or the emergency room. She's scared to death. They'll recommend a MRI, and last time they tried that without sedating her, her heart rate went over 200, and then they decided I wasn't there. The daughters, or Bernice tried to tell them she couldn't take it. And they got to knock her out with a shot before they take her down there. But heck, that's a free sleep.
Just she's claustrophobic, is that what causes it? Or is it actually cause some kind of problem for her?
Oh, that's it. Yeah, when we first got married, I brought her out to California. And we got our first apartment, and she went in the closet, and I shut the door behind her. She, like, took the door off. And I didn't realize she was claustrophobic. But it's not something new, Patrick.
I can relate to that. I won't say I'm claustrophobic, but I don't like to be confined.
Oh, I'll tell you a little short story. Went to survival school with other Navy guys, officers and enlisted men, and the Marines from Camp Pendleton. And one of the things during interrogation they do is they lock you in a black box. And you get down on your knees, and then you bend over in this box. And the box leg comes down on your back and actually squeezes you down in the box, and they lock it. And you got one little hole to the right side of your face that you can breathe out of. And they leave you in there. Well, there was 125 of us, and I was prisoner number 94. And whenever they walked by, it was like on a stage, whenever they walked by, they'd tap the nightstick on the top. And you were supposed to scream your prisoner number, and I did. But he decided I didn't scream loud enough, and he left me in there for 2 go-rounds. And when they finally let me out, my body was asleep from my neck to my toes. And he started sticking that nightstick in me. He didn't hit me with it. He jabbed me with it. And it just burnt like fire. And I couldn't get out of the box. I finally stood up, and I just rolled out of it and then crawled out of that bunker because he was still poking me all the way out of that bunker. I didn't mind being locked in the box, but twice that was a little extreme.
Nowadays, they bring them up on charges for that.
No, I don't think so. Not in survival school. In boot camp, yeah, it's a lot easier now. But still not easy by any means. But in survival school, you wouldn't believe it. Anything goes, Patrick. All kinds of torture there that you can't imagine.
IKO 4 ATX in. I don't want to imagine either.
In zero TR. Yeah, they'd hunt you in the daytime. They had M1s. And they'd hunt you in the night evasion. And both evasions were 8 miles long. And crawling through the timber and that at night was no fun at all up in the mountains. It would be spitting snow and sleet and stuff like that. And then they'd load you in these trucks, like pack you in these trucks and haul you to a prison camp. And by the time you got in there, they all talked like Russians. And believe you me, you thought you was in Russia in a prison camp. And no infractions were tolerated of any kind. And they had every kind of trick in the book, and they were good at it, Patrick. And you had an 8 for, I don't know, 5-6 days, except they give us 1-inch piece of corned beef on Wednesday, and you didn't have any way of telling time. I think you can have a wristwatch. I'm not sure. Can't remember. Too many years ago. And then one day, they give us 12 rabbits, and we cleaned out this big black pot with sand, and they give us the water to put in it. And I got a piece of fuzz and a bone, I think, in mine, and I just dumped it out. And I give the corned beef to the guy next to me because I won't eat corned beef. I was hungry, but I wasn't that hungry.
I agree with you. My mom used to fix corned beef and potatoes growing up, and that was the one meal I hated. Just never could stomach that.
Made me eat sauerkrauts and weenie one time. I'd leave the house when my mom would make that. And he forced me to eat it one time at the table, and I throw it up at the table, and he didn't make me eat it anymore.
Stepmom, she used to have a rule, you had to eat a bite of everything she cooked. My brother took care of that for us. He hated fried squash. I love it, but he hated it. And she had someone died, and that's exactly what he done to her. She made him eat it, and he ruined everybody's supper.
I think I did too. Yeah, I just couldn't go. We had the only thing you could carry up there was a toothbrush and some toothpaste. Anything else, it didn't matter what it was, in your flight suit, that's all you had, in a jacket. Anything else was contraband. And I actually seen some of the officers, we didn't, us enlisted guys, we didn't take any toothpaste with us. Wasn't any place to brush your teeth in anything anyways. Up in the mountains about 8 or 10,000 feet. And I actually seen some of those guys eating the toothpaste, but the prison camp was the worst. It was definitely water, they took it away on the last day. That's what I was getting at. When they take the water away, everybody started going downhill real fast the last couple of days.
Take long, no water to become dehydrated and start causing problems, severe problems.
When I come out of that black box, I'll never forget, I come back up out of the bunker. I should have made a run for it, but I was afraid I couldn't find my way up to this. There was a light up on the hill. On the mountain, I guess you'd say. And it wasn't very big. And I had a little bit of vision problem. I'd sort of cheated on the eye test a little bit to get into a flight crew by memorizing the eye chart. And anyways, I was afraid to make a break for it. And as I went in the gate, this chief had his thumb tied to a string on the door, and it was bleeding. And there was another enlisted guy on the other side, and he was a chief too, I think. He had a big pot of something there, and I was the last one out of that particular torture. And I knew it was getting towards the end, so he dumped some kind of goop in. We had a half canteen, and he gave me a spatula full of it. I said, give me two, Chief. I said, he's getting towards the end. And he had raw eggs. And that's what it was. I told him, give me two of the raw eggs. And it was a concoction to make you sick. And we didn't know it. And I heard these guys making funny sounds over in this one side where there was a bunch of guys lined up in order. And I went to the other side because we were still eating ours, and the guy next to me throwed up. And there was a guy beating on him trying to make him eat it off of the ground. Well, that was the end for me. I throwed mine up too. It was something with nuts and sauerkraut and vinegar, and I don't know. It looked like food to me, so I was eating it. But it didn't take long. I throwed up too. And one of the guys was a lieutenant, and they started running us around at the inside of the compound to make our stomachs cramp. And oh my God, Patrick, that hurt. And he passed out. And up until then, you never seen anything that didn't look like it was back in the dark ages. All at once, there was oxygen, there was an EMT. I saw this aggressor walk over and kick him in the side because he thought he was faking. And the guy didn't move, and he rolled him over, and he wasn't breathing. I think that scared him because he almost died. And they got the oxygen to him, got him back up. We never seen him again, but they said they let him graduate. And normally, you lose all of your classifications and that if you didn't graduate survival school. But I think those guys got kind of scared.
Didn't that put a little bit of fear in everybody when something like that happened?
Oh, my God. You never had stomach cramps like that in your life. They knew what to give you on an empty stomach. And then they put us back down to San Diego. We was up someplace in the mountains there. They called it Warner Springs. And once they bust us back down to our base there in San Diego, they told the guys, do not go out and eat a big meal. Sick. And you know how that went over. Guys went out and ate steak dinners and this and that. And the few that went through that school were pretty sick guys.
Been eating in a while, and then you go out and eat a big, heavy meal like that, you're going to pay for it.
That's one time I listened, and I'm glad I did. So I didn't eat too much. After about the third day, you didn't get hungry anymore, Patrick. And they give you some water. I don't know. I don't remember how much. But as far as being hungry, I don't know why, but I wasn't hungry. And you knew you was going to go for 7 days. So, you know, so there was a finite number of days that you had to get through. And that was your initiative to get through that. But those guys, they went out and celebrated. And they paid the price. It's Zinger OTR.
They paid the price, and they fortunately got us.
I'll tell you some of the things they pulled on us. It was, that's been 50-some years ago, and I still remember it like it was yesterday. That prison compound, buddy, it was a prison compound. Constantino wire, you name it. All them guys running around with that little red star on their hats, and they talked with an accent, and if you wasn't scared, you was a fool.
Kind of make it realistic, I guess, and yeah, if you wasn't scared, you'd be a fool about it, that's for sure.
First night down at Coronado Beach, you were down there overnight, and they said, anything you catch, and you can eat. And some of those idiots went out in that water. I'd have to look at the date, but it was icy cold water. And they went out in that water trying to catch octopus and different things like that around the rocks there, and they got wet. Well, that's the worst thing in the world. You don't want to get wet. But we had some of them that made attempts, and they were down there in them rocks reaching back in them holes. No, not me. My luck, I grab a moray eel or something, you know, or he grabbed me, or a shark. I was from Kansas. I didn't like swimming where something could eat you.
Yeah, I grew up around the house there and playing in the rivers, and you'd always have a little sucker fish that'd be nibbling on you. They couldn't do anything, but they'd pull the hairs on your legs and nibble on you and scare you to death.
We had carp, and there was another one that fed off the bottom. I can't remember what it was, but oh, yeah, I went to the river with my buddies in that old muddy Neosho River out there in Kansas, and we'd swim in it and get out in the riffles, and one day we got the bright idea we was going to scare our parents, well, not my parents, but Bill's parents, the guy I was with, and so we went up river, and we flipped the boat. It was a John boat. We flipped it upside down. And then we went in under the John boat because there's about 6, 8, 10 inches of air under there, and then let the boat drift down past the cabin. That did not go well, Patrick.
Catch you anyway?
Yeah, they didn't cut us no slack for pulling that trick on them. It scared them. But we was young kids at the time, and we thought it was fun. There is an air pocket under those John boats, so if you ever get trapped out in the river, and you just barely got enough room for your head under there.
Well, we always, playing in the river where I'm at, it's usually, hey, some places over your head, but most of it was, you know, chest deep to a kid, small teenager, but not too bad. So, I mean, we grew up playing in them rivers every day that we could. So, skipping rocks, chasing fish, snakes, whatever we could find.
Well, up in Kansas, they had all these strip mines, and there were a lot of them 100 years old. And they had water in them, and it was clear as a bell down to about 10 feet. And then after that, the sun didn't penetrate. Out there at night, and there was a rope swing off the side of the dump, and we'd go out and swim in that at 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, if we could get away from our parents long enough, and it was a lot of fun. So I didn't have any problem being able to swim when you went in the Navy. We had guys that went in the Navy that didn't know how to swim. And I thought, why didn't you join the Army, the Marines, or the Air Force? But I'm sure those guys had to probably learn how to swim, too. But they had a difficult time with it. But it was a lot of fun in those rivers and those strip mines. And we fished in them and hunted around them and really enjoyed the life up there in Kansas, I'll tell you, when it comes to being in the outdoors. It was a lot of fun. We even had one strip mine that was about 80 foot deep, and they stocked it with trout every year. And you could go out there in the wintertime and catch trout, and that's something we didn't have in Kansas. This is NZRO-TR.
4-H-GAX. Well, trout is a native fish up there where I'm at. They're known for the trout waters. We've got brown trout, speckled trout, you name it, probably up there. And so trout fishing is real big up around the house. And I used to love to do it when I was a kid growing up. But now, like here in the next month, there'll be so many people up there you can't get near the water. So I just don't mess with it anymore.
To go down to Roaring River State Park, which was south of us, 30, 40, 50 miles. And the guys down there, when the trout season had opened, it was just like that. They were standing elbow to elbow. Where we went fishing at, from my home, you were lucky, unlucky, if you ever even seen somebody else, usually. There were just so few, but over the years, that change, but they did make a lot of wildlife areas that the state made that was open to everybody. But the old strip mines that Mackey Clemens Coal Company and I think it was Peabody or somebody else, one of the other big coal mines had, they were open for, oh heck, 75 years or so. No houses on them, anything. Now people are building $300,000 houses on the site of them, and they were told not to because the ground don't settle there for 30 years. And then going back and suing the companies when their foundations start to crack, duh, they walk among us.
And I can vouch for it.
They've bought up all of the mines. It's like, you know, beach houses to them, and I don't blame them. You know, if I'd had the money, I'd have did the same thing. But they go out and buy 100 acres, 200 acres, whatever, and then bulldoze a place and fence it all off so nobody can get in. And, gosh, we used to go to all of them. And some of the fondest memories I have is hunting and fishing up in there. But even up there, times have changed, Patrick. Anyways, we're lucky to live during that time. Trout, I don't like trout to eat, but oh, I love to catch them. I went out there at that pit a couple of times with a friend of mine, and we fished for trout. When he said, when the snow's flying, Tom, he says, that's when the trouts are biting the best.
I don't know about that, but they're usually deep in the water when it's cold like that. I know up around the house, March is usually the only month of the year you can't fish, so that's their spawning season. That's when they're stocking everything, too.
Kansas, you're wasting your time to go fishing in that pit. It had a natural spring come into it. It's one of the reasons they stocked it. And it was deep. But in the summertime, the trout would go deep. In the wintertime, you'd see them breaking water out there at times, Patrick.
This is different things, but the water temperature up at the house is usually when that river's like 55 degrees year-round. It don't matter if it's 100 outside or not.
Bob Bisinger, he caught one. It was over 4 pounds up there one time, a rainbow. And I told him he should have had that mounted, and he didn't. And now he regrets it. I don't know how big they get down here.
I'm not sure how big they get down here. I know I've seen some 8-10 inches long. That's pretty average size around here, or used to be. Like I said, I don't go anymore, so as much as it's being fished, they probably ain't 4 inches long.
Well, up there, Roaring River, I remember walking over there by where that stream comes out of that cave, and the game commission there had a fish hatchery. Oh, some of those things were big, Patrick. I can't remember the size of them, but that was in Missouri. It would be northwest Missouri, I guess you'd say, and they were pretty big. But I thought that was a monster trout when Bob told me about that, and he sent me a picture of it. But I don't know if he ate it or turned it loose. But Bernice tried making some of them one time, and I like bass about a pound and a half to 3 pounds. Nowadays, I'd fish anywhere. I'd throw them back if somebody said they didn't want you to keep them. Doesn't matter to me. You know, I was waiting for it to go buy fish, but I love to catch them. And up there, though, they provided us with a meal. If you caught a 3 pound bass, you had a meal for us. I got two down here on the wall. I think you saw them, and they were right at 7 pounds, both of them. And the biggest one they ever caught in Kansas used to be 12 pounds and so many ounces. I knew the guy that caught it.
Idea what the record is around here. I just never have looked into it. But, Tom, I have arrived here where I parked the truck, so I might have to make the vehicle switch. I'll be back in a few minutes if you're going to be around. KO4HKX.
Well, I got to call a guy back from Kansas. He called me a while ago, and I told him I wanted to take care of Bernice, so I'm going to go check her again. And good talking to you, Patrick. And I know the bass are a lot bigger because they feed year-round, and up there they go dormant in the wintertime. So I think 18 to 20 pounds down here wouldn't surprise me. 73's Patrick, KO4HKX in 0TR.
And I hope Miss Bernice gets to feeling better. KO4HKX, clear, 73.